As we close in on Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's Eve, you'd think that things tend to die down at the state capitol. But you'd be wrong. Lawmakers in the state assembly and state senate are busy with a bevy of legislation under the dome in Madison. This hour we'll welcome two state senators from western and west central Wisconsin to talk all about it. That's today on the West Side. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning on Ideas Stations 88.3 WHWC, Menominee, Eau Claire, and 88.7 WRFW, River Falls. I'd like to welcome, in no particular order, two state senators, one from Alma, one from Stevens Point. First, Senator Patrick Teston. He is a Republican state senator who represents the 24th Senate District. He is from Stevens Point. Senator Teston, welcome.
Great to be on.
Great to have you. And next, Kathleen Weinhout. She's a Democratic state senator from the 31st Senate District. She resides in Alma. She is also running against Governor Scott Walker in next year's gubernatorial election. Senator Weinhout, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Listeners, if you want to take part in this discussion, please do. It always adds to the questions. It adds to the comments. 1-800-228-5615 if you've got a question or comment. Otherwise, you can post on our West Side Facebook page. Just search for The West Side, and you'll find it there. Also, you can go online and listen to prior shows with lawmakers. We have them just about every month or so. Years worth of programs at WPR.org. So with that, there's a lot to get through, and I wanted to talk to both of you first about just the jobs numbers. We had a jobs numbers report that came out, and these, of course, the month-to-month jobs numbers are estimates, but things seem to be looking up for Wisconsin's economy. The unadjusted estimate for October was an increase of 9,500 jobs. The year-over-year quarter jobs number was up substantially, too. I don't have that number right in front of me, but let me start with Senator Weinhout. Is this a signal that the state is going in the right direction in terms of how the legislature maybe contributing to an economic recovery?
Well, the legislature doesn't create jobs.
Right.
The private sector creates jobs. Unless, of course, it's a public sector job. But generally, the state has lagged the national average and is quite a bit below Minnesota. When I look at the patterns of where the jobs are being created, it's interesting that what I see is that there's a lot of job growth in western Wisconsin. And the two economic drivers that we see right now seems to be Madison and western Wisconsin. Both of those are great places to live, especially Eau Claire. Eau Claire's been in the statewide news a lot lately. When I went back and looked at the patterns of job numbers, what I noticed, interestingly enough, was that Eau Claire had created 3,000 jobs in the last 3.5 years, which for those of us who live in or near Eau Claire is something that we've kind of known because we've seen the growth. These are good jobs. They're high-tech jobs. Looking at what has happened with JAMP and then the support for the arts community and music and what's happening to really revitalize downtown, I think that what we see is something that I've been talking a lot about over the last 10 years, which is that businesses come and jobs are created in places that are great places to live with amenities, parks, recreation, the arts, great schools, good transportation. These are all things that the public sector does to support the climate for job growth. So I'm encouraged that we're seeing some job growth, but actually we've been seeing it for a while in western Wisconsin, but not so much in the rest of the state, with the exception of Madison.
I wanted to kind of follow up on that, and Eau Claire is being held up as an example in a lot of ways, the arts economy, but also we've got some special circumstances. I'm not sure if it translates to every other city in the state. We've got a few pretty well-to-do younger people who have decided to stick around and invest big amounts of money into Eau Claire. I'm not saying that anything is you know, any one person can be credited with anything, but is it a unique situation, or do you think it's something that could be transported?
I don't think it's unique. I think what we see happening in the Twin Cities is quite a bit similar, and maybe on a much bigger scale than in Eau Claire. Mm-hmm. But what happens when you create the kind of economy where young people want to invest? What happens is that the public sector needs to make the investment in such things as alternative transportation, which is something that Eau Claire has been trying to get done since I've been a legislator for 10 years. And it's certainly what's happened in the St. Paul, Minneapolis area. And all of the things that are reasons to stay in a big city for young people, or, you know, for that matter, a rural area. Access to broadband, access to public transportation, safe streets, great schools for young families, opportunities for recreation. These are all investments that the public sector makes. And my argument when it comes to economic development is, first of all, we don't know that much of what the state has invested, the hundreds of millions in the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, have actually created any jobs, because they're so bad at keeping records and verifying whether or not those promised jobs were created. But second of all, the public sector overall has been, with the exception of economic development, has been starved. So transportation hasn't been funded the way it needs to be. Schools have been underfunded. State parks have been cut. Recreational activities, the arts community, all these things that make a great place to live have been underfunded and haven't kept up with, the governor hasn't kept up with paying the bills. So I think we've got great potential, but the public sector has to do its part. And I don't see that happening in the way I'd like to.
Senator Teston, let me go to you. Again, 9,500 jobs added, it's an estimate, in October. We've also got I've got the numbers in front of me, the quarterly census of economic employment and wages. The data from quarter two, I believe, year to year from second quarter of this year compared to second quarter of last year, 28,342 jobs up. We are in the positive in that term. So do you think that, I think a lot of people would agree that government doesn't create jobs. You hear that on both sides of the aisle. But do you think that the policies that have been passed in the state budget or prior state budgets might be improving the climate?
Well, I certainly think so. And I think there's reason to be optimistic about the future of our state's success. And a lot of it stems from the hard choices and the reforms that have been put in place by the governor and the previous legislatures. And as a freshman lawmaker myself, it's been really great to see the record investment back into our classrooms within this budget. You know, as Senator Vinehout mentioned, you know, we do face some unique challenges in especially our rural areas of the state. And, you know, we also have an aging demographic. When you take a look at our population that is 65 or older, over the next two decades, that's going to increase by 72%. And the areas that are going to be impacted most are western Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin, and central Wisconsin. So we've seen great gains in economic development in places like the Fox Valley, southeastern Wisconsin, Madison, and then some areas like Eau Claire and the Hudson area right across the river from the Twin Cities. There's still other areas of the state that we can do better in. And when we got more people leaving the workforce and entering it, you know, some of the questions that, you know, I heard a lot about, conversations I had in my district was, all right, what are we going to do to train up our future workforce? And for me and a lot of my colleagues, it was right back in the classroom, $636 million going back into K-12 education. We're at two-thirds funding from the state to our public institutions for schools. And so these are all great things. I mean, worker training, that's another area where it was a 50% increase in this budget from the last biennium. Just retraining and retooling our workforce and giving them every avenue of success to go out and get a good paying job. Because as we travel around the state, I think Senator Vinehout and myself could both agree that if a help wanted sign or a now hiring sign was a political candidate, they'd be feeling pretty confident on election day. And so, trying to make sure that we retain all of our talent right here in the state, but also that we attract talent from outside of the state. And also, too, what was brought up, some of the some of the rural areas of the state. This session, as a continuation from the last legislative session, was the creation of the Rural Wisconsin Initiative. It's really focused on workforce development, education, technology, and healthcare. And so in this budget, we incorporated a lot of good things in the budget to help rural communities, whether it was the $23 million in broadband expansion grants to creating two $1 million matching grant programs for worker training for advanced practice clinicians and allied health professionals in rural clinics and hospitals, to a whole number of different things that we got into this budget that really send a strong message that regardless of where you live in the state of Wisconsin, whether it's an urban center or a rural area, that the state's going to help make those investments to make sure that all of Wisconsin moves forward together.
The, you know, some would be quick to point out that the investments in the K-12 education or even the higher education systems in the state follow, you know, some historic cuts. And, of course, the argument was that those were offset by reforms known as Act 10. But, you know, what do you say to people that are quick to point that out?
You know, there's some validity to that, but at the same time, because of the tough choices that were made by the previous legislatures, it put us in a place where we're now at a place in the state of Wisconsin where we can invest again. And I can't think of a more appropriate area and a more critical area than the future workforce of the state. And that starts right in the classroom, giving teachers more resources and more avenues to train up a student, giving students themselves more access and availability for dual enrollment. So that way, no matter what happens when they leave that high school and they either go on to a four-year college degree or two-year technical school or directly into the workforce, they're going to be prepared and ready and ideally get a good paying job without having to rely on taking out so much debt and into the job market sooner.
And I wanted to follow up on something that you mentioned, Senator Teston, but I want this to go to both of you. I guess I'll start with Senator Vinehout. The demographics that this the state is facing, it seems like a challenge because the biggest growth in our population will be in people, you know, hitting the later stages of their life. We're talking about 50s plus. Meanwhile, we're not growing a lot of we seem to be growing fewer anyway, kids and fewer college-aged adults over the next 20, 30 years. So, you know, we can pass these different things. We can try to do what we can, but is that some kind of a crisis that's facing the state? And if so, is there anything we can do about it? You know, can you encourage people to have bigger families?
I sometimes joke that we would solve our school funding problem if we could put something in the water. But having done my share of baby making and being finished with it, I don't want that to happen either.
Okay.
But there's no question that this is a challenge, and it's a challenge that the legislature has been, and some, you know, coaching the legislature have been talking about for 20 years. We can see this in the declining enrollment across the state in our school districts, especially the rural school districts. We can also see the population changes in the number of students that are applying to the two-year tech colleges, the two-year UW campuses and the tech colleges. The University of Wisconsin, of course, has gone outside of the state to bring in young people, but then we aren't able to keep those young people afterwards. I think there are a number of things we can do. I wanted to respond a little bit to Senator Teston's good news about the budget because, of course, I voted against the budget and I see a great deal of problems. I also believe in putting forth alternatives, and for the fourth cycle in a row, I wrote an alternative to the governor's budget, basically redoing the math, keeping everything the same in terms of the total amount of money spent, but spending it in a different way, under different priorities. And I strongly believe that we need to not only put more money in schools, but change the way that the schools are getting the money. We need to change the formula, and in all four of the budgets I wrote, I showed how to do that with the same amount of money. The fact of the matter is that the schools are getting less than they were 10 years ago in dollars adjusted for inflation. So obviously school costs have gone up. So no matter what you hear in terms of the Republican talking points, you only have to look to your local school district and say, you know, hey, how are you doing? And you're going to hear a very different story. But to keep young people that are graduating from school here, I suggest that we make two-year UW campuses and tech colleges free for everybody, every Wisconsin resident. It's something that I've been working on since 2013. I introduced a bill a couple of years ago to do this. Since that time, the Tennessee governor has had a lot of success in making a state program that's the last dollar, meaning that the students apply for financial aid and get all the financial aid they can, and then the state kicks in the last dollar. That's how I've modeled the bill that I'm about to introduce in the next couple of weeks. And what it would do is bring people that have a perception that two-year college, two-year UW campuses and tech colleges are out of their reach. And this is something that I personally lived through. I was born at a time when my folks thought that higher education was wasted on a girl, and my dad wouldn't sign the financial aid papers, and I ended up having to become an independent student and worked most of the time full-time when I was going to college. And in the first 2 years, the only thing I could afford was a local college, a tech college. So I remember vividly wanting to go to school and feeling like there was no way I could afford it. That's a perception that shouldn't be a barrier, should be an obstacle for higher education. And one way to keep people in Wisconsin, and one way to raise the wage rates, which were historically very low wage rates in Wisconsin, we're right now ranked 18th worst in Wisconsin when it comes to wages and salary, is to open wide the door for higher education. So that's one specific policy that I would change. Again, I did the changes in the budget based on the total amount of money that the governor spent, rearranging that total amount of money in a different way that helped people instead of putting so much money into a few select companies that promise to create jobs and don't actually deliver on it, or we don't know if they deliver on it because nobody's verified it.
So in your alternative budget or in this plan, that this bill that you say you'll be introducing with regard to providing free two-year college through the UW colleges, or what they'll be called in the future, how do you pay for it? I mean, wouldn't that blow up the state budget?
It's the same amount of money that's in the budget now. So one of the many different programs for some businesses, certain types of companies, mostly manufacturing companies, are able to take various tax credits. The manufacturing companies have been complaining that they don't have the workers. And so with that particular bill, the bill that I have that's coming out in a few weeks, I take the one particular tax credit, and right now businesses are claiming about 44 different types of tax credits if you include Foxconn. And this is one of those 44 tax credits, and I repeal a portion of it. And I use that money to pay for two-year UW and tech colleges for all Wisconsin residents. It's a trade-off that I think the business interests would support, because right now they're complaining that they don't have an educated workforce. The UW, one of the arguments the UW is making for getting folding those two-year UW campuses into the main system is that there's not enough students going to the two-year UW campuses. Well, I think everybody that wants to go to a college ought to be able to go to college regardless of how much money their folks make. This is a program that I've modeled after Tennessee's very successful program. It's a program that requires some community service, so the kids have to give back to the state that's given to them, but they don't ever have to worry that their folks don't make enough money. And I think that perception is very, very important.
Senator Teston, before we go to break, if you want to respond to that, please do. But I guess the same question goes to you. We've got some looming demographic challenges in the state. So if we're not producing the same amounts of young people, what can be done to kind of, stave off some of the bad impacts that could come as a result of that?
Well, sure. The Department of Health, actually, they have a name for this. It's called the Silver Tsunami,
yeah,
the aging demographic wave that's coming our way. And so, I mean, short of telling people to go out and have more children, we have to start finding more ways to retain our talent here in the state, but then attract talent from outside of the state. And so I've been working with Representative Petrick, Representative Murphy, along with the Wisconsin Economic Development Association, to start working on some proposals that aim to try and keep some of our some of the students that come from out of state, to give them some sort of incentive and tie it with how many years that you stay in the state of Wisconsin, to try and offset the cost from out-state versus in-state tuition, to hopefully be a draw to have them stay here. Because as the numbers show, and I've talked to a number of employers in my district, and they track this data regularly, that, you know, for some of these companies, they found that if they can get their employees to stay and work there for at least 3 to 4 years, 80% of those employees are going to set up roots in this community, in Stevens Point, in Wisconsin Rapids, because they are great places to live, work, and raise a family. And so that's where I think we have to get creative and think outside the box a little bit to, you know, dangle that carrot stick out there to get these people here. Because, again, 49 other states are facing similar challenges. And I think we have a better, a great, compelling case as to why Wisconsin should be their future home. And so if we can get them here and have them become homeowners, taxpayers, raise a family here, we're going to help alleviate that rise in the aging demographics here in the state of Wisconsin.
With that, let's take our first break here on the west side. If you are listening and want to chime in, please do. The number to call in with your questions or comments is 1-800-228-5615. We're talking about legislation moving through the state capitol. This is our legislative roundup. We're speaking with two lawmakers from western and west central Wisconsin. They are Kathleen Weinhout. She's a Democratic state senator from Alma. She represents the 31st Senate District. She's also running for governor against Governor Scott Walker. That's next year. In November is when the gubernatorial election will be held. There's a wide range of Democratic candidates, which we might speak about a little bit later. Also, I'm joined by Patrick Teston. He's a Republican state senator from Stevens Point, representing the 24th Senate District. Looks like we've got some calls coming in. So if you have any thoughts about current legislation, pending legislation, if you'd like to see lawmakers do something that isn't being discussed, 1-800-228-5615. You can also check out the West Side Facebook page and leave your question or comment there. We'll be back in just a bit.
Support for WPR comes from Port Washington Tourism, with Christmas on the corners, live reindeer, a scavenger hunt, and pictures with Santa, December 2nd, ending with a parade and evening fireworks. Visit portwashington.com.
The Chalake Arts Center kicks off its fifth annual Art of Film film series shortly. The series runs three different Saturday dates, November 25th, December 16th, and February 24th. Films begin at 7. Details can be found at the center's website, shellakeartcenter.org.
And we're back with more West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. I'm speaking with State Senator Patrick Teston of Stevens Point and State Senator Kathleen Weinhout of Alma. Senator Teston is a Republican. He represents the 24th Senate District. He was elected to his seat last year. He's a freshman. And Kathleen Weinhout is the Democrat. She represents the 31st Senate District. She was elected 10 years ago, and she is currently running with a large group of Democrats to, with hopes of unseating Governor Scott Walker next year. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. Before we go to the phones, though, I wanted to talk about a bill that both of you have signed on to. This has to do with hemp farming. It's made it all the way through the state Senate, state assembly, and it's waiting for Governor Walker's signature. This has to do with making it legal to farm hemp in the state. First of all, do you think that the governor will sign it? Senator Teston, I'll start with you.
I think he will. I think when you take a look at the fact that it passed unanimously in both houses,
yeah,
I think that sends a pretty strong message that this is something we can get behind and support, and we should support it. But I also want to thank Senator Weinhout for her efforts and work on this. I know in previous sessions she's authored this bill, and it's long overdue. You know, at one point, state of Wisconsin was the national leader and producer of industrial hemp in the U.S., and unfortunately, because of its close familiarity, it's a cousin of the marijuana plant, even though the THC concentration within industrial hemp is so low you can't get the psychoactive high that you do from a marijuana plant. But, I mean, hemp's time, it's here. And this all stems from the 2014 Farm Bill that passed Congress and was signed into law by President Obama that kind of left it up to the states. And since 2014, 31 other states have reintroduced industrial hemp into their fields, including our neighbors in Minnesota, Michigan, and Illinois. And when you take a look that we import $500 million annually of industrial hemp from Canada, this is a prime example that we can lessen our dependence on foreign imports by growing it right here in the state of Wisconsin. And there's so many different uses and applications for this plant, from the textile industry to using the fibers as a replacement for Kevlar, fire retardant materials for firefighters, graphene for batteries, and then even the health benefits. The seeds have omega-3s and proteins in them. And when we had the public hearing, it was really neat. We had a hemp farmer from Kentucky come up. Her name's Katie Moyer. And obviously in the state of Wisconsin, we're known to like our alcoholic beverages from time to time. And she even brought a bottle of Kentucky moonshine that was made from hemp seeds.
Huh.
I mean, there are so many different uses for this. And I think this is an opportunity to bring back a crop that we once led the nation in, and that hopefully we can be leaders again moving into the future. So I was proud to work with Senator Vinehout and our co-authors in the assembly to get this done, and I remain optimistic that the governor will sign this into law.
Senator Vinehout, same question to you. Do you think the governor will sign it? It doesn't. I couldn't find any references in the media reports as to whether he has said it he would or wouldn't. And also, secondly, you know, if you could expound on what Senator Tessin mentioned, why is this so needed in Wisconsin?
Well, the only quote I've read that the governor made was the day, or maybe the day after the very long all-day public hearing that Senator Tessin mentioned. The governor was asked in western Wisconsin what he thought about hemp, and his quip was, "Oh, hemp is a gateway drug. No, I'm not in favor of it." It does. Listening to the story that Senator Tessin told, I think the governor should pause on whether or not he's going to veto it, because if the legislature in both houses nearly or unanimously passed the bill, clearly there are the votes to override the governor. So that's going to give him a bit of a pause when he decides that he whether or not he wants to sign it.
And I don't mean to make light of your chuckles, but some people are really worried about that this could open the door for legalization of medical, which is a bill that has been introduced. You know, a lot of people have wanted that, but some people are afraid of the whole idea.
Well, the story that Senator Tessin told us, and we learned about in the hearing, and those of us that have been working on the bill, you know, have kind of worked on for a long time. The story is that Wisconsin led the nation in the production of hemp all the way up until the late 1950s. And in fact, we learned in the hearing, the very last mill that processed the hemp was the very last one in the United States was in Wisconsin. And the crop was well suited to our climate. It grew well, and it was profitable for farmers. Somehow in the 1950s, the hemp got all mixed up with its cousin, and folks thought about hemp and realized it was the same species of plant, although a very different type of plant, very different variety, as what became known as marijuana, which is a type of cannabis, and poor hemp lost out. But over the years, people have realized that hemp is a commodity. It's a commodity like corn and soybeans. If you smoked it, you'd get a bad headache, and that's it. When I grew up, we used to call it ditch weed. It grows naturally all over Wisconsin. And to think that it needs to be treated differently than any other crop is really in taking on that prejudice of the 1950s. As Senator Tessin mentioned, the Farm Bill in 2014 opened the door for states to pass their own laws, to start pilot programs, to figure out how to grow it. Our bill in Wisconsin has been around at least since 2007. I wasn't the first person to author it. It was actually a bill authored by Republican State Senator Dale Schultz. And when I chaired the Ag Committee in 2009, I worked with Senator Schultz on the bill. And then when he left the legislature, I took up the bill and introduced it again in the Senate in 2013 and again 2015. This time, Senator Tessin and a number of the Republicans in the Assembly took the bill and made it better. They made changes that empowered the University of Wisconsin to create test plots around the state, to work with the local ag agents. Our ag agent and a number of Western Wisconsin counties are very interested. I have a lot of people, both Republicans and Democrats, in, for example, Buffalo County that are calling me saying, hey, I don't want you to use my name, but I'm definitely interested in starting this crop. I'm looking for an alternative. I'm tired of corn and beans. We don't have as many dairy farmers as we used to. We just talked about how we're all getting older. We need a higher value crop. When I read the literature, 30 other states consider hemp, or I guess Patrick said 31 other states consider hemp a commodity. It's high time Wisconsin considers hemp a commodity. So while I don't discount the concerns that people have, and including the governor, about being gateway drug, I'm sorry, but you read, do your homework, it's bunk. It's absolutely bunk. There's no way that you can get high smoking hemp. It'll make you sick, and that's it. But as a crop, in terms of opportunities for manufacturing in Wisconsin, in crops and products that people are buying from out of the state right now, we've got all kinds of opportunities for grown in Wisconsin, manufactured in Wisconsin, sold in Wisconsin, and hopefully sold across the country. I believe that this is an economic opportunity that Wisconsin farmers should not be missing out on.
I'd like to go to the phones now. Senator Tessin?
I was just going to say that, you know, when the bill was first introduced, the idea of it was first introduced to me by Representative Kramer, I had reservations because at the time I wasn't educated enough to know the difference between industrial hemp and marijuana. And so after I did my research, I'm like, this is crazy. Why aren't we growing this now? And so, I mean, we really did our due diligence and really made the case with our colleagues in both houses. And when you can get some of our colleagues in the Senate who hail from the southeastern corner of the state who are as conservative as they come and, you know, thought, you know, things like CBD oil were going to be a gateway drug to legalization, to get them on board and support this, it says a lot about the time and effort that we took to build the case and show that this isn't what people think it is.
Unanimous votes in both houses. We'll see how the governor reacts. Right now, I'd like to go to the phone. So first call, she's been on the line for a while. Amy in Rice Lake, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I wanted to talk about the technical college in Rice Lake. I'm a non-traditional student. I'm disabled, and I'm attending there for the new gerontology program.
All right.
But they've come up with the Promise Scholarship for local seniors in the area for free tuition, and it was used and come up with as an idea to keep those young people in our area. Rice Lake's experiencing a nice growth spurt there. I've spent almost all my life in that area, born and raised, and it's nice to see and hear some of the younger kids at the college talking about their future, which includes making a home in that area. So I just thought I would call and touch on that.
All right.
I'll take a comment off the air. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you very much. 800-228-5615 is the number to call. Senator Tessin or Senator Vinehout, any reaction to that?
I'm not sure exactly what she meant.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the Promise.
That's the name of the Tennessee program. I wonder if maybe she was referring to Governor Doyle's Covenant program, which was in effect for anybody that graduated from high school in 2009, 2010. It was something that Governor Walker repealed when he took over in 2011, but he let those who were given the promise to continue with the program. So it's right now enough time has passed that all those kids have finished college and the program is totally shut down. It's the program that I'm talking about that we're going to introduce, my office is going to introduce in the next couple of weeks, is actually much broader, and it opens the door for anybody who's a Wisconsin resident, including somebody who's, say, 35 or 45 and wants to go back to school to get the skills that they need. And so I feel like that definitely people want that opportunity. I've heard a lot of people who say, hey, I'd love to go back to school, but it's too big of a barrier. The cost of it is too big of a barrier.
Senator Teston, you jumped in too.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not too familiar with that particular program, but, I mean, it sounds like a great idea. But what I was going to comment on, it was really nice to hear that, you know, people from that area are staying there. Earlier this week, I was at last week, was at a meeting in Wisconsin Rapids. And, you know, some of the challenges that they face, and it's with smaller communities throughout the state, is that the stigma that if you don't leave your hometown, then you're considered a failure.
Right.
But you're starting to see that narrative change that, you know what, you can have a good job, a good way of life from the place that you grew up in. Just because you didn't leave doesn't mean that you should be looked down upon. And so I think that's really it's great to hear that stigma slowly starting to be chipped away at, and that we can change that narrative so that way, you know, kids don't graduate and think the only way they can get a good paying job is they have to go to places like the Twin Cities or Milwaukee or Chicago. Not that those are nothing wrong with that, but, you know, people need to know that they can get a good paying job in their hometown because there are so many opportunities out there.
All right, let's take another call. This has to do with the hemp bill, and we're going to Brian in Fall Creek. Brian, are you there?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, what's on your mind?
If you could do me a favor, put me back on hold so I can actually keep listening other than my fuzzy radio in my office afterwards, that'd be awesome. Get that online, Rich. You need to be online, my friend.
We're working on it. Hey, you know what? You can go online. Check out 88.7 WRFW. The students over in River Falls have rigged it up, so you can do
awesome.
It through that.
Thank you. I will do that. At any rate, I just wanted to clarify. I think Kathleen had claimed the governor said it was that industrial hemp was a gateway drug. Actually, his quote, as put in WEAU.com, it's early in the process, and it's certainly something we'll look at. Overall, looking at this, I have concern in anything that would lead to legalization, mainly because as we fight opioid and heroin abuse across the state, one of the things I hear from public health and law enforcement and others is anything that's a gateway into some of these other areas is a big, big concern. We hear it from small towns to big cities and everywhere in between. So Governor Walker didn't say that industrial hemp was a gateway drug. He said that he's concerned about anything that would lead people down the road that would lead to opioid or heroin abuse. So I know she's running for governor. She just kind of tossed that out there. All of a sudden, Governor Walker thinks that hemp is a gateway drug. That's not what the man said. So just wanted to clarify that.
Duly noted. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
And I guess that was kind of... And not to go back and revisit the issue because we're getting short on time, but I think one of the questions, what I was getting at is, could the legalization of growing hemp in the state at all pave the way for other legalization efforts in the state? So very quickly, yes or no, I guess, Senator Vinehout.
Well, I see MS2 totally different.
Sure, sure.
As I think I've explained.
Yep.
I look at hemp as a commodity.
Sure.
And that's exactly why experimental plots and the changes that happened at the federal level were in the Farm Bill.
And Senator Teston, same thing. Commodity, not a potential, foot in the door for marijuana legalization folks?
Absolutely not. And really, I mean, it boils down to science as well. We had a professor from the University of Indiana who's worked extensively dealing with industrial hemp, and I mean, his research found that if you try to grow a marijuana plant in an industrial hemp field, because the plants cross-pollinate so quickly, the THC concentration in the marijuana plant will get so diluted that it actually kills the plant.
Huh.
And as we heard from some others that testified that if you don't want marijuana grown in your state, don't introduce industrial hemp because the industrial hemp will destroy the plant. So, I think it's a great example of Mother Nature doing her work and why that should alleviate some of the concerns that others have out there.
And I do have a note from our producers that the WITC Promise Program is a free tuition scholarship funded by the WITC Foundation. So There you go. With that, let's take our final break here on the West Side. We're talking with Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Alma and Republican State Senator Patrick Teston of Stevens Point. We still have time to take your calls. We've got a lot more legislation that is worth talking about when we return.
I'm Christopher Kimball from Milk Street Radio. This week, Milk Street Radio presents our Thanksgiving special, including all of our contributors. Dan Pashman of the Sparkville talks about anxiety at the holidays. Reporter Sandeep Roy finds himself without a turkey in India. And wine expert Stephen Muse gives us his best advice about what to drink. Our Thanksgiving special coming up this week on Milk Street Radio from PRX.
Thursday morning at 10 on the Ideas Network. Support for WPR comes from the EVU Foundation, the charitable arm of the Capital Times, a source for authoritative news and progressive commentary since 1917. The Capital Times makes the Foundation's work possible. Details at captimes.com. Support also comes from the Water Street Historic District, an eclectic mix of locally owned shops, salons, and restaurants, offering shoppers boutique gifts, dining, and more in the heart of Eau Claire. Make memories on Water Street.
I'm Rich Kramer. You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio stations 88.3 and 88.7. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking with state senators from our region. Kathleen Vinehout is a Democrat from the 31st Senate District. She's based in Alma. Patrick Teston is a Republican representing the 24th State Senate District. He lives in Stevens Point. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got a question or a comment. And again, we're just running through a long list of legislation that is working its way through the state capitol right now, heading into the holidays and the end of the year. The session goes much longer than that, but still, just kind of a busy time for lawmakers as they're trying to wrap up before the holidays. With that, we've got so many things that I want to talk about. Very basic. This is already passed. The governor says he promises to sign it. This has to do with what is known as the mining moratorium law. Governor Walker says he'll sign the bill that repeals what has been commonly called the mining moratorium law. It wipes out a provision in state law that required companies interested in mining metals from sulfide ore bodies to give examples of safe mines in other parts of North America before getting a permit. So, with this bill, will it help Wisconsin or hurt it? Depends on who you ask, in my experience. But Senator Vinehout, your take on it.
I voted against the bill. The current law is that the potential mining company needs to prove that the technology that they're using is safe. When this is a type of mining that extracts metals that are not iron, the types of metals that the mining companies are looking for are metals like gold, silver, copper. These metals are nestled in other types of metals. So there are a lot of chemicals that are used to extract these metals, to process them, to take the valuable metals out of the rock. The chemicals that are used are highly toxic. Cyanide, for example, is one of them. The Prove It First law was put in place because there was no safe way to remove these metals, and the way that the law was written was that the mining company would have to prove that they're safe, that the techniques that they used were safe. Instead of following that process that already exists in law, Senator Tiffany and others put together an extensive bill that changed the process. I voted against the bill because I don't see the process as being safe, and a lot of the environmental rules that were put in place are now being removed. It's, of course, there's a long history under the Walker administration of removing environmental regulations. Also, the way that the process was set out is that it's very, very difficult for the DNR to be able to take the time to do the work to be able to understand what needs to be protected, because the time limits were scrunched down and there wasn't a lot of time given, and of course the DNR is woefully understaffed.
If I could follow up on this, a lot of people point to the example up in near Ladysmith, the Flambeau mine, and as an example of safe mining. And also, you know, they say that technology has changed. You know, people, when this law was passed back in 1997, there were concerns, rightfully so. Many would say that the technology at the time didn't promise safe environmental situations. Has that changed?
Well, again, that depends on who you talk to. What I learned is that the mine in the Flambeau mine never did processing. It was all processed in Minnesota. So the type of mining that's being talked about now is not comparable. It's not the same because a big danger lies in the processing. The technology, as near as I could tell in the reading that I did, still uses these highly toxic chemicals in some type of a holding pond, and the holding pond is lined with clay. But anybody who has spent some time in western Wisconsin, and where I believe my district probably has more mines than any other district in the state of Wisconsin, our Senate district, knows that those holding ponds leak. If we look at the extreme climate change that we've had in western Wisconsin, we had 100-year floods back-to-back 2 years in a row. And you know, 11 inches of rain in a holding pond of toxic chemicals is going to could result in those toxic chemicals being all over the neighborhood. We've already seen the sand that was being washed and soaked with chemicals, the propellants being all over the neighborhood when there's a 100-year storm. So I feel like this time of climate change is that we haven't yet figured out how to live with. This is not the time to relax our environmental standards when it comes to metallic mining.
Senator Teston, you and I toured the Flambeau mine prior to a public hearing on the bill in Ladysmith, and then I believe you voted for it. So how was it a win for Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin, a part of the state that one of the bill's authors, Tom Tiffany, said it sorely needs this kind of economic boost?
Well, just like the industrial hemp bill, this is a bill that provides another opportunity to reintroduce an industry that was once one of the backbones and foundations of our state's economy. And so we were at the public hearing. I sit on the committee, and we heard a lot of testimony. And what really kind of drove it home for me where I could get behind this was the testimony that was provided by George Meyer, former DNR secretary, head of the Wildlife Federation, who said when the original moratorium was being put through, that the DNR was opposed to it. Because it's important to note that no two mines are the same. And so we were going to be, under old law, you had to try and compare a mine that maybe was in Arizona or the Arctic Circle to a mine in Wisconsin. It's comparing apples to oranges. And so it's important to note that every environmental protection still exists. They still have to go through the permanent process through the Army Corps of Engineers, the EPA, the DNR. And then through the testimony that was given, we incorporate amendments to make the bill stronger, to put more safeguards. We included a new permit for the bulk sampling process, making sure that the best technology and practices are used, because technology has advanced so much in the last 20 years. Not only that, when you take a look at states like Michigan and Minnesota, they're mining currently. In fact, Governor Dayton just approved a non-ferrous mine a couple weeks ago in the state of Minnesota. And so the notion that mining and tourism can't coexist, I have to disagree, because it is working in Minnesota. It works in Michigan. And when you take a look at the average salary of a tourism industry job is about $22,000 per year, whereas the average mining job is about $70,000 per year, this is a chance and an opportunity to really give a shot in the arm for economic growth in the Northwoods, which has been hit hard over the last 50 years throughout migration. So provided they can go through the permanent process, this is a chance to really bring back some true economic development in an area of the state that needs it the most.
If I can follow up, Senator Teston, and we do have like 3 minutes left, so it's crazy for me to even ask this question with so little time left, but I'm going to do it. local control. Some have accused Senator Tiffany and others of trying to preempt local control when it comes to mining issues, specifically sand mining. We've seen a lot of debate over that. Right now, there are local communities that think that there might be non-metallic mines, you know, sulfide mines popping up in their neighborhood. They're looking at their books. So would you, would you be okay with a local ordinance that would maybe make it tougher for a company to mine sulfides, to mine gold, silver, et cetera?
So that was actually an amendment that was incorporated into the assembly version of the bill that got us the votes that we needed in our house to pass it. So essentially the amendment that was authored by Representative Hutton stated that the bill does not go into effect until 6 months after the governor signed it. So local municipalities, local units of government, if they want, they can put in zoning in regards to mining.
Mm-hmm.
So if they do that, they have to reach an agreement between the mining company and the local units of government to get a final approval. So again, another example through the legislative process where you start with a new product and through the process you make it better. And so I think we're to a point, and we got to a point where this is a good legislation and something I was certainly happy to support.
Senator Vinehout, with about a minute to go, do you see any potential conflicts with local ordinances kind of preempting the spirit of the bill?
Well, as you know, Rich, this is a big, big issue for Western Wisconsin. The chipping away of local powers has happened in many, many different bills, including a bill that just passed the Senate in the last week. It's kind of a catch-all bill. There are a couple bills that the Senator Tiffany put together that have a whole lot of different pieces, from flying the
bill
flag
of rights
to preempting local control. This one actually had to do with overturning a U.S. Supreme Court decision, mm-hmm. where St. Croix County went all the way to the United States Supreme Court. They had their ordinance upheld, protecting the shoreline along the St. Croix River, and this bill overturned that decision in a little bit of a very much of a hodgepodge kind of bill. It was very complicated, and I'm afraid that the dangers for local people to protect their local ordinances come in a variety of ways, and they come in a number of different bills, and we're not anywhere near the end of the legislative session. And I'll be watching carefully all these bills that come through, because usually it's not a single bill with a big red flag on it that says, I'm taking away local control. It's buried on page 34, line 21 through line 27. And that, it takes a lot of diligence to pay attention to that kind of thing. And
Senator, thank you. I'm sorry that I asked such a question with so little time. I want to thank both of you for your discussion. Senator Vinehout, Kathleen Vinehout is a Democrat representing the 31st Senate District. Senator Patrick Tessin is a Republican representing the 24th State Senate District. Thank you both so much. Also, thanks to Team Westside, including Mort Cypress, Henry Lippold, Dean Collenbeck, Kate Spranger, and many more. Have a safe and productive week. Enjoy the holiday. We'll chat again next Monday morning.